Welcome to That Makes Total Sense, a podcast dedicated to exploring God's generosity and justice. I'm Alexis Busetti, a Christian aiming to ask good questions and encouraging you to do the same. Every one of us is wired by God to live out generosity and justice, but the how sometimes eludes us. That Makes Total Sense is a way for us to get together, posture ourselves as learners, and challenge one another to practice generosity and justice in a tangible way every day. Hey, everybody. After just a few minor technical difficulties, I am so pleased to be sitting here with Don Schoendorfer. He is the founder of an organization that I had never heard of before I grabbed his book, but I'm so thrilled that it's in my life now. It's called Free Wheelchair Mission. And Don is going to talk about that as well as the book that he has just written called Miracle Wheels, The Story of a Mission to Bring Mobility to the World. Hey, Don, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Wow, this is a real honor for me too.
Oh, well, I let you know that I was flying back and forth to the Midwest this week, and this was just the absolute perfect airplane read. I love a person's story, like memoirs are my jam, but I also, in this book, got to experience not only your story, but your story interacting with other people's stories, and this, what we love to explore on the podcast here, God's generosity and justice. So thank you, first of all, for being so generous with your story, these things that I can imagine are just so close to your heart. Thank you for sharing them with us through the book and through your work at the organization.
Okay.
So first of all, can you just give us, before we get into how Free Wheelchair Mission came about, can you give us like the elevator speech essentially of what your organization is and does in the world?
Well, we address this issue that according to the WHO, World Health Organization, there's 75 million people waiting for wheelchairs. And the way I look at it, they're crawling. If they have strength in their arms, if they don't, somebody's carrying them. And if they're too heavy or too frail, they're languishing in the back room and they're living until they die. And 75 million, that's a lot. And because we don't see people like that in crawling or being carried, you know, or visiting and languishing in the back room. So a big surprise there. And then, why is it so expensive to get a wheelchair? Well, there's a lot of reasons why it's expensive, especially in a blessed country like we have here, that where would there are resources to buy expensive things, especially if it's for somebody's better well-being, medically speaking. Because we set this price being so high, all of a sudden there's no way these 75 million people are going to buy one, and no way anybody's going to even be able to pay for one because they're just so expensive. So my background as a near engineer, and not being burdened with a lot of experience, decided let's the chair with wheels. I mean, the name has the ingredients. Let's just go get a chair and some wheels and get a wheelchair and get people so with basic needs for mobility up off the ground. And that's what we've done at Free Wheelchair Mission.
This is fantastic. I wish that people could see the cover of this book. I will link it in the show notes so that people can get a glimpse of it before they order it. We'll get into that in just a minute, but literally the prototype was a white lawn chair. Everyone in America knows that exact chair. They've sat in that chair, and it was the white lawn chair with bicycle wheels.
Yeah, mountain bike tires, because I didn't know much about the developing world, lifestyles, culture, terrain, but I figured it's got to be a lot of loose soil there, dirt, sand, mud. And so you go after that with a mountain bike tire that's nice and wide. And so that's what we picked. It's like an off-road wheelchair in a sense.
It's totally fantastic. But before we started recording, I shared with you that I have had some people close to me in my life who have utilized wheelchairs for their primary source of mobility. So when I was a college student, I worked for a family and helped as a, they called it a habilitation aide at that point, 20 years ago, I don't know what they call it now, but helped with just everyday activities for their teenage daughter who had cerebral palsy. She got that at birth, which is relatively, you know, it's somewhat common to have experience a birth in, an injury at birth. And so she used an electric wheelchair. And then I had an aunt who experienced a brain injury in her early 40s, and she used a wheelchair for the rest of her life. But even so, it really took reading your book for me to kind of use my imagination for what a lack of mobility would look like and does look like in developing countries. And so I'm saying that to say I'm probably not the only one, but also for you, this wasn't something that you, that was at the top of your mind, you know, growing up either. You had to have an experience in a developing country with, you know, recognizing, seeing someone who had a lack of mobility for, to get your wheels turning, so to speak. So can you tell us about that experience that you had in Morocco years before you started this mission?
Yes, it was back in 1979, freshly out of, you know, my educational experience in universities, and my wife as well. And we're starting our careers and, you know, building a house and starting to think about a family, not building a house, buying a house. But we went to Morocco, and it was probably a mistake because we didn't have any money. And it's a beautiful country and the people are beautiful, but from an outsider's perspective, it was just so new to us, and being Islamic as well. Within a few hours of landing and then going to a city and then going into the Medina, which is the old part of the city, now we're talking about Syria, not 1200 AD kind of architecture and a dirt road, and there's burros towing wagons made out of wood, and people are just going every different direction. But all of a sudden, between the legs of a group of people on this narrow road, this woman starts to crawl across the road. And she's using her, I'd say over and over, you're using her fingernails for traction, because her legs were being, they're just useless, being towed behind her. And she's, and her elbows, and she's just moving, you know, and I wouldn't say step by step, it's almost like reach by reach. And her clothes are filthy, and they're torn, and she's a bit bloody, and, you know, and she's just looking at the ground in front of her. And it's like, wow. Well, never seen anything like that, never even imagined something like that. And then she disappears down an alley, and, you know, she's going relatively slowly, but mainly she's probably thinking, please don't step on me. And you know, I look at Lori, my wife, and she looks back and says, well, you know, we're Americans, we got to be able to take care of this, let's go find a place to buy a wheelchair and get this poor woman up, you know, some peace and quiet. And she's gone. And this was, again, a 1200 era type of a location we were in. And all the stores, they sold stuff that people would buy, spices and clothing. And we just walked away. That was an experience that it would come back to me. The memory would come back from time to time. Something would remind me of that woman. But and then, you know, I spent 20 years trying to develop that career, develop the home, develop the family. And it wasn't until a teenage daughter came down with a bulimia and eating disorder that we weren't strong Christians. I was brought up a Christian. My wife was brought up in a Catholic church. And I always gave God credit for starting the universe, because actually, no one else can explain it. It has to be something he did, because it was just doesn't make any sense if it could have happened by itself. But I didn't think he had any time or I wouldn't say interest. It's not that he wouldn't be interested, but this is big. This universe is big. And, you know, and so we just had to surrender to him, though, nonetheless, because there was no cure for someone with a severe eating disorder. And that brought us to our knees, brought us back to church. And I, after a couple of years of being a pedestrian in the pew, I decided to get off the curb and get back out in the road and tried mentoring and tutoring people and figure with my education, I could probably really help them with their math and science. And I wasn't getting very good at all. So especially with trying to mentor people, because they're in Santa Ana, there's some rough, just rough neighborhoods in Santa Ana, and they're people that were mentoring were on parole and in and out of their home and sleeping in cars and sometimes in jail. And it was almost like one middle of the night, I heard this voice. I mean, this didn't really happen, but if I can sum it up this way, because this is a period of maybe a year, you know, Don, yes. Well, you know who I'm talking, you know who's talking to you now. Yeah, I do. Well, why are you wasting your time? And why don't you use the gifts I gave you to do something for the kingdom? And he elaborated on the fact that the gifts that I was trying to use, I mean, with the talents I didn't have that I was trying to use were not appropriate for me. And he knew, you know. And then he hung up in the sense. So that really, you know, okay, you got it. You know, well, I'm an engineer. Why can't I do something with my engineering skills to help people? How about that person that I saw in Morocco? Why can't I help that person in Morocco? And so then you do the research and I find out about this 75 million people. And that's a low estimate. That's what the World Health Organization comes up with, but that's a low estimate. And then I did some research on who all these organizations, and there were about 20 of them worldwide that were spent maybe even a couple decades trying to help. It's hard not to do something when you see people like that. And they were trying to refurbish used wheelchairs because in this country, every 5 years, if you have insurance, you'll probably get another wheelchair every 5 years. And you don't want to give it up because you know it's an expensive wheelchair, but nobody really wants to use wheelchair. So it sits in the attic or the basement or the garage. And then, so these groups will get them and refurbish them. And then there's a few couple groups that are actually buying very kind of low-end basic wheelchairs. But again, they're all designed for people with needs in this country. And that was impressive because that's a lot of work what they're trying to do. But I added up what each group had done. And in 1999, and for the world, they had given out 100,000 wheelchairs to 75 million people. And they worked hard at it, their heart and soul. Some of them Christian, a lot of them just humanitarian people that really just wanted to help. And I said, you know, well, it's a chair with wheels. Why do we have to make it any more complicated than that? We need it durable. We need it functional. We need it safe. We need it inexpensive. And all that means it's got to be one design. You know, you don't have all the variations. So you've got so many different variations of wheelchairs. So started out with a lawn chair with bicycle wheels, Toys R Us and Home Depot. And we didn't have to drive very far. And started to do the reverse engineering and figured that if that bicycle cost $60, they probably made these wheels for $3. And that, of course, it was coming from China. And the white resin lawn chairs were on sale for $4 in the fall. So I got two wheels and one chair for $10. And okay, a couple casters and some steel to connect it all together, and made a prototype and didn't know what to do with it. Because I didn't know who to show and who to talk to. This is all new. And finally, I got an appointment at a mission director for the church we were going to and still go to, Mariners Church in Irvine. And he had just gotten off a plane from Democratic Republic of the Congo. And he was jet lagged, tired, but he heard my idea. I said, you know, just 2 days ago, I saw people crawling on the ground in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And he was right on. Let's help. Let's figure out what the risks are. What's the big bottlenecks? What's this? Let's move on this. And it was the church just got behind it. And so I went and made 100 of them because my career was doing clinical trials for companies and on medical products. And I knew how to prove safety and efficacy, which is the jargon you use when you're in this industry. And so I figured I couldn't afford to do much more on my own, but this 100, and I'd get them out and I'd come back a year later and see if the wheels are still turning. And I'd write a paper. Safety and efficacy of an inexpensive, durable functional wheelchair for the developing world. That we know is the title. And that's what engineers do as well. We're really good at writing papers and then letting someone else go from there. The first one we gave away. I mean, I hope I'm going down the right path for your conversation.
You're great, Don. You're great. Thank you.
In church, I get an elbow in the ribs from my wife, who was reading the bulletin and not paying attention to the scripture. And she's reading that they had an opportunity for volunteers to go on a medical mission to India. And it was, they want doctors and nurses. And I said, you know, Ori, this is no time to have a discussion about this, but I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse. How is this going to work? She says, well, you know, but we got these 100 wheelchairs in the garage and I'd love to get my car back in. So let's do something. Because I was basically stagnant. And so I showed up at the meeting and, you know, everybody was really very talented medical staff in Orange County, you know, surgeons and nurses. And then there's this guy who's an engineer and he can't do anything medically. Doesn't have a medical background. He can't practice medicine, but he wants to bring 100 wheelchairs with him to India. They told me they wanted, they're just, after I left, they could, I don't know if they prayed that I would go away, but they all wanted me to just go away. And I'm planning on going away because I just had to get this out. And so it was hard because it didn't look to them like a wheelchair. And most people say, well, that's just a lawn chair with some big wheels on it. What, you call that a wheelchair? I said, yeah, I do, because I kept on thinking that woman, she had strong arms. She was crawling. She'd be able to propel that chair and just get her up off the ground. She wouldn't have to worry about people stepping on her. So, it kept on getting more and more difficult. I couldn't ship 100 to India. There was no way. They had all kinds of problems with import exemptions and things. And I wound up taking 4 on a plane with me, with the 4 passengers who were in this medical mission trip at the end of it. And when I got to India, same thing. Didn't look like a chair to them. And yes, I don't know, in the mission world, you never get enough sleep. You never have enough stuff. It's just never. It's just a whole world of never. And the last thing you want is another project. But in India, you can't walk in a city. You can't walk more than 100 feet without seeing somebody on the ground. Said that really want, like, what's wrong with these people? And then I realized, what, there's nothing wrong with them. They're just overworked people and they're doing their best to practice medicine. And so we go out on a mission the next day. It was a Sunday. I called the card table clinic because I did the card tables. That was what the engineer could do. I moved boxes and set up card tables, and we waited for the first patients to come. And it's 100 degrees and probably pretty close to 100% humidity and just very uncomfortable, but that's just India for you. And I see a couple people coming down this dirt road and they're taking turns carrying something. And as they get closer, I realize they're carrying a boy and he's squirming and he's flailing his arms around and his head's going back and forth and he's drooling and he's grinding his teeth. And I later heard that was cerebral palsy. And it's because of home childbirth, which is common in the world. If there was a hospital, you may not have the money. And it was only a few dollars to have a baby born and back then, and, but who's got a few dollars? So then your neighbor's got kids. So, I mean, there must be a way to do this at home. And, you know, since you may know and understand that it's just a slight interruption of the oxygen in the blood flowing to the brain of the newborn, and that affects their motor skills. And he had a pretty bad case of it for sure. And he was a handful for them. They didn't have any other children. And so I had a wheelchair. It was on top of the bus, big white bus we used to get to this suburb. And I dragged it down, and I didn't have a translator because there was no need for, I wasn't going to be able to do anything anyway. So I was just over in the corner in the shade, and I got the wheelchair down and I put it in front of them. And I was sort of coached that it's a man's world out there in the developing world, and that most likely if anybody was going to take the only chair you had, it would be the father or the grandfather, but it wouldn't be the mom or it wouldn't be a kid. And so I put it in front and stood back and smiled, and it with my clipboard, you know, because I'm going to take data right from my paper. And she put her son in the chair. And his hands are going left and right, and his legs are going, and he's sliding out, and she's putting it up, pulling him back into the chair. But he wasn't being carried by a sweaty body, and he started to cool off, and he started to calm down a little bit. And then she's rocking the chair back and forth like it's a rocker a little bit on the rear wheels. And then she's doing figure eights. And then she goes over this curve, and I'm figuring I'll probably lose it at this point, because if you don't go over lining up, you know, wheels with a curb, you can twist it and turn it upside down. But she probably had a lot of experience with the wheelbarrow because she worked in a rice paddy. So she knew how to get this stuff over curbs and things. And all of a sudden my peers from India and from the United States, they look over, and there's this, I had the first patient already in a solution to a big problem without saying a word. And so they were challenged. And so they're being kind about it, but they do, some of the Indian guys, the doctor said, well, what if it doesn't fit through the door? And somebody, they'll have to leave it outside. Somebody will use it for a wheelbarrow and it'll be gone. And so let's ask the people to stay, and we'll drive them home, and we'll just make sure it's going to be work in their village where they live. And so they did, and we drove them home, and it was quite a sight to see this big white bus coming down the driveway, and there's about 30 families living in homemade shacks, and they all worked at a rice fields, rice paddies, and they tell us, you know, it was 3 miles, that's where they carried their son, and they tell us if we both worked, we could make $2 a day, but since one of us has to stay home, we make $1, and that's what covers the room and board, so there's their net zero. Get to their home, and it's the doorway was wide enough, and we got the wheelchair into the door, and I get inside, and it's got a room for a hammock, that's their bed room, and it's also everything else, it's just one room, and there's a little pen on the ground, maybe 4 foot by 4 foot on the dirt, and that's their son's bedroom. And they had a blanket for him, but, you know, it wasn't a clean blanket, but it was a little padding. And they had one set of clothes to wash and one set of clothes to wear. And that was their earthly, total earthly possessions. And so I'm just trying to get information, data, you know, my clipboard. But there's occasional tear coming out of my eyes too, because I'm seeing how this family is just so excited, but they didn't know what was going to happen, because you don't give things away like this to people in the developing world. They're not used to it. And then all of a sudden, the neighbors come in, and there are other people using branches of trees for crutches. Polio is, you know, it's pretty much gone, but there's still people that have it, that had it before the vaccines came out. And all of a sudden, interesting, the man who was our guide and our translator, his name was Moses. And Moses came up to me and said, Don, we just have to leave right away. And I said, why? And he said, well, because I neglected to get the permission from the elder of the village to come in here. And you, and this, and I've embarrassed him, and he just showed up, and he's really mad. You could tell he was really angry. And I said, yeah. And I didn't know what was going to, this is a Hindu village, you know, and the elder is he's the judge. He's the authority. He's the man who is the mayor. And so, okay. But before we go, I did my job. You can do your job now, Moses. And he said, what's my job? And I said, why? I brought the wheelchair. I'm the engineer. This was my good, this is what I can do. But I know you have a Bible in your pocket. Tell them why we're here. Say something to this crowd, because there's 20 people in this crowded room now. And so he opens the Bible and he clears his throat. And I could tell he's a little nervous because he wasn't used to just walking into a village and in a Hindu village and talking about Christianity. But they all listened to him. And I didn't think that was anything unusual, because that's what you would do in any culture. But he told me later that it's very uncommon to, they know you're reading from not their book, but your book, and they have lots of suspicions about Christianity, and usually they either mock you or they walk away, he says. But they just this wheelchair thing was just, they needed an explanation. And then we get in the week, like, you know, by this time my notes are a blur of tears, and everybody's just, we don't know how, nobody knew how to process this information. So we get in the bus, and the bus driver is angry because now he's late for his appointments, and we're late, but we didn't care. But we start to drive down this dirt road, and the villagers started running after us, yelling, waving their hands. And, you know, of course, all the Americans here, we think, well, we're going to get kidnapped for sure here, and they're going to hold us hostage, and who knows what's going to happen. And all the imaginations are just going like that. And the bus, the men in the, actually got in front of the bus and put their hands right on the windshield. You're going to either run me over or you're going to stop. And somehow they got this command from somebody to stop that bus. And we turn around, and here's a mom walking out with two glasses of water. And she realized we're leaving and we're not taking the wheelchair with us. And we told her it was a gift, but what does that really mean? And then she needed to give us something in exchange. That was just her culture, or maybe it's her religion. And, you know, and it was like, oh, I can't believe this. And then, I brought four wheelchairs there. I have three other stories that are just as powerful as that one, because God knew he needed to not just influence me, but he needed to influence the people that were there about how powerful this gift of a wheelchair could be. So a couple of days later, the very skeptical mission group in Chennai, India, was driving me around Chennai to show me all the disabled people that they want to give wheelchairs to. And they said, we'd like to be your distribution partner. And I said, what on earth would I ever need a distribution partner for? I got 96 wheelchairs back. All I want to do is get them out, and I'm going to make that paper. I'm going to go back to my life, you know, as an engineer, biomedical engineer. And you know, like 2 years later, I realized how important it was to have a distribution partner, because they're the ones that actually do all the work in giving out these wheelchairs. And they're motivated because they saw how they could share the gospel, and they could walk in to a village and be greeted because they have a wheelchair for the person who's probably suffering the most in that whole village.
Don, I want to thank you for sharing that. I want to pause, and this is, we don't have to go entirely there, but one thing that keeps striking me in your story is this idea that God, kind of going back even to the beginning when you started to tell that God asked you to use your gifts, the things that you were good at. I think many Christians have had experiences. I could share my story of that, and myself and my husband, of we have to be vocational missionaries, right? We have to go somewhere and do something and live and change all of these things. And we weren't able to do that. And for a long time, I felt like I had failed, like we, you know, had failed. And we had a similar story of my husband is a scientist, and he has an engineering background, but he works in the sciences. That's what his graduate degrees are. And before he went back for his doctorate, we really felt like the Lord was kind of communicating to us, hey, you're a really gifted scientist. What if you did that for me? Right. Mm-hmm. So kind of a similar situation where you're trying to do all of these things, and this you're kind of fumbling over yourself because this isn't necessarily what you're particularly gifted in. And when I read in your story, and you've alluded to this biomedical engineer, I mean, Don, you have a degree from MIT. It's like, this is, you know, you have done what God has asked you to do using your gifts, and partnered, distribution partner is a good example, but partnered with a lot of people who could help you do the things that you were gifted to do. People who have partnered with you in your beginning your nonprofit, people who have partnered with you in shipping, people who have partnered with you in all of these things, doing what they're gifted in, to see this vision of yours come out and help now over a million people receive this gift. So, I mean, how can you, just give us a little bit of your story in that respect, but also encouraging us, you know, when we look around and say, I'm not a pastor, I'm not a missionary, in your case, like, I'm not a doctor, but I'm here. How can I partner with the Lord to do these things and utilize my unique gifts in this world to meet a need?
Well, yeah, it is. And some people don't know what they're good at yet. And some people may never know what they're good at. And there may be, for a whole lot of reasons, they haven't been around people who could see that for them. I mean, parents can usually tell what your sons and daughters are good at. But that doesn't mean they can get them to go in that direction. You know, I was good at doing engineering, and I was good at studying and learning and all that. But and I was, you know, I was okay. But it was but all of a sudden, how can you expand that in a way that might be more useful? Right? I was making one company beneficial over over another company. Because this company that I was working for had a product that was a little better than their product. And then, you know, and then that would just go back and forth and back and forth. And gradually we come up with a society that has very sophisticated medical technology, but it's not really focused on other than people where we can make money somehow on it. And I was in that world, and I was very happy in being in that world. But, and then, you know, along your life, you see things. It's like connecting the dots. You see this, your memories. You got memories. Oh, you try to, if you can put them on a piece of paper, there are going to be dots everywhere. And you try to figure out, there's a connection here. God is showing me these things that I didn't expect to see, whether it's in a movie or whether it's a conversation or, you know, somebody crawling across a dirt road in a developing country, or, you know, a dream sometimes. It could be dream. I mean, God talks to you, talks to me, talks to us, and it happens. It's not a coincidence, is what I used to call it, a coincidence. And you kind of connect the dots, and then suddenly you can try to see, you know, is there something here? Is he telling me to go in this? Is he asking me to go in this direction? Because I can't explain why I got to this point. And then you, of course, then you're faced with a risk of, do I go in that path, or do I have enough confidence in what I've put together on this page full of spots, and I'm connecting these dots in this way? Do I have enough confidence to go forward? And then, you know, you'll find out eventually whether it's going to be a good path or not. Because we all have tried many things that didn't work out very well at all. you know, and sometimes we've lost a lot of money. Sometimes we've just lost a lot of time, but there, you know, I think if God feels that you're on the right path, he's going to help you make the next step. Yeah. If you surrender, if you know, okay, God, just tell me what you want me to do today. It's not easy. But if you go to a developing country, which is where I was kind of focused on, it's not hard to find things that people need. We usually give them what we don't need anymore. We give away our old clothes, we give away our old stuff, you know, and it gets shipped to them. But if you were to spend, I could go spend a month in a slum and I'd probably find ideas that would be very useful for them. And it may require scientific knowledge to develop that sort of thing for them. It may be pushing the state of the art of computer technology to give them something that they could really use, as opposed to something we think that they should have and because we have it.
Right. And thank you, Don. I love how this, you know, looking at your website for the Free Wheelchair Mission, on the front page, we would have no idea that this wheelchair that you're distributing right now had its beginnings with a white resin lawn chair and bicycle wheels. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly from the book, this may be a spoiler alert, that paper never got written.
No, I'm waiting to do that.
But that's, you know, you went into it kind of knowing what you knew, right? This is what I know how to do. This is how I can serve. But I mean, the way that your story read, at least the way that I read it, it was like, but kind of the more that you got into it, God brought more people into your life. There were more connections, like you just mentioned, and you kept going in a direction that you didn't foresee at the beginning. And now, maybe can you tell us a little bit about this wheelchair? Is a maybe third generation, if I'm remembering correctly, and you've come so far, this organization has come so far from four wheelchairs, you know, to 96 in your garage, but four wheelchairs, you know, on a plane, to now over 1.3 million wheelchairs having been like widely distributed in all over the world, which is, it's mind-boggling that a prototype like that could have gotten to this place. So maybe if you could give us just a couple of highlights, you know, things that were really pivotal in moving this idea from single prototype giveaways to what your organization is doing now.
Well, one of the things was I was focused on evidence. I was focused on gathering evidence and writing a paper that would have signed review, be reviewed by my peers, you know, all that stuff that you do. And I realized after that first wheelchair, the evidence is very important, and it makes our culture stronger because we can prove things that are better than other things. But in this case, there was no need for evidence. You could see it, and you could see it, and you could just see how these people's lives would change. Now it would double their income, and just that one chair. And of course, you have to give it to them because they don't have any money. But it was really the people just wanted to hear the story of the first chair, just like I just told you the story of the first chair. And you're not saying, well, how you're not asking me questions. Well, how long does it last? And, you know, can you do this? And you do that? Because it's such a huge thing that's missing that you can just, we can, and we're trying very hard to come up with data and convince, because, you know, there are places we want to try to get money from foundations who require that sort of data. And it's quite a challenge to do that, but we're actually spending a lot of time trying to do that. But, you know, we came out with this, the Gen 1 wheelchair. That's the one with the white resin lawn chair. And it was an adult chair. And that's how I looked at this problem. I didn't realize, well, you know, like Don, I mean, there's kids are going to have these needs too. Well, but it doesn't fit a chair for, it's not a good size for a child. It's, you need, they need support. And you, and I just, you know, you remember your mother saying, sit up straight. You know, if you don't sit up straight, you're going to grow up crooked, or, you know, however. And you know, mothers were right. And so you do have to give a child in a proper fitting chair to, and an adult too, same thing. And, you know, we've got one chance to help that person, and they'll probably never be seen by another person with a wheelchair again. I mean, some are, of course, the people are living in cities and stuff, but, you know, we've got one chance to make their life as enjoyable as, as possible. And so we, everything's in a box, and but we realize we've got to make a chair that's a lot more adjustable. And people have legs that are one is 8 inches longer than the other one, so you have to have a footrest that can compensate for that sort of thing. And they have long legs and short legs, and they need support for their backs if their disability extends past their hips, and you've got to have them in so they can have a proper backrest. So we, but we can't, it's going to cost more to do that, because you want one, a basic resin chair is, you know, $4, or now they're probably 8 or 12, but, you know, so we learned how to work with factories in China, and we asked them to be creative in our behalf. And that was quite an accomplishment, because China can make anything you give them to make, but the people there were not used to being asked to be creative. They're used to just give us the drawings and we'll make it for you, or give us a sample and we'll just duplicate it. But and together we've come up with a Gen 2, which was slightly more expensive, but it had all these adjustable features. And then that was second generation, and it was a very strong frame. But you go to a person's home, and, you know, granted, again, 98% of our wheelchairs are given out by distribution partners. We rarely get a chance to go in field and actually help them. We do it more, but it's just so expensive. And that was probably one of the smarter things we did, because all the things you have to know to work in a different country, in a different society, is something you could... If you're not right, you're just going to make it worse. And also, let's let them give away. Let's find Christian mission organizations like the ones in China to give away these. I mean, in India. Sorry, that's my clock. To give away these chairs. And so, so when we do go out, we'd say, well, where do you want us to assemble this chair? Because it comes in a box and you have to put it together. And then you say, why? Because, well, your doorway is too narrow. You're not going to get it through the door. So we can put it inside, which was always the right answer for them, or outside. But then you've given them, you know, now you've given them the freedom of mobility within their home, but they got to get outside. So we came up with a Gen 3, which is a chair that folds up. They've been around for hundreds of years, and they cost a little bit more and they're a little heavier, but then that's our third design. We tried to put all the adjustable features of the Gen 2 into the Gen 3, but make it a fold-up chair. So, and that's the third generation. And we're, you know, working hard on now a fourth generation, because we know we have to keep on improving, and, you know, and the demand is certainly out there. So can we make them lighter? Can we use aluminum? Can we make them more adjustable even than we have? At least a big percentage of the people with disabilities in the developing world have more complex disabilities, like cerebral palsy, like that boy that I mentioned, the first boy that we gave a chair to. He needed something that would keep his arms and his legs in contained. And that's a very difficult step to make, because your distribution partners have to be occupational therapists, physical therapists. And there are not that many out there in the developing world. So, you know, we've worked really hard to come up with training so we can train. And after a week, the people that we've trained know more about disability than probably most of the people in the country, because there's never been any reason to have this training, because they didn't have anything to give them away, to give the wheelchairs to. But it's that's kind of the track we're going on, is to continue to evolve better products.
So Don, people have heard this and heard how you have used your gifts and talents, and people have partnered with you and joined with you kind of on the large scale. But how can someone just like me, like a regular old person who doesn't have any of that understanding or knowledge that that you have about biomedical engineering, how can we get involved with Free Wheelchair Mission? Like, how much would it cost someone who wanted to give a financial gift to send a wheelchair to someone? Do you have worked out like that?
Yeah, definitely
what,
have.
What you does know, that it, look like to partner and, with you guys?
And then, you know, that's how, that's what, you know, someone has to pay for the wheelchairs, the 1.3 right. million wheelchairs, someone paid for every one of them. And we can have a wheelchair manufactured, shipped by ocean container, brought to a port in one of our many developing countries that we serve, 94 of them so far. And then our partner will accept that container, and they'll offload it from the container ship. They'll arrange for all this to happen. If they, that someone has to pay for that too, they arrange all that. And then they'll store the wheelchairs, and then they'll find people who need the chairs. They'll know what they would have already ordered, what size they wanted. And they will assemble the chair, and then they'll take it to the people, either in groups of, you know, one at a time or hundreds at a time, and have a distribution. And they'll do all that for $96.
Wow.
It's trend. They'll have, and that'll include the adjustment of the chair, training how to maintain the chair, training of the family how to use the chair, for the person who, well, how to get in and get out of the chair, you know, how to transfer, they call it, how to go downstairs, upstairs, down ramps, up ramps. And we can do all that for $96.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yes, and yeah, the shipping alone, it costs $250 for me to ship a wheelchair to the East Coast from here. And that includes shipping from China or India. I mean, so it's it's like you were saying, there's so many people that, oh, well, I have talent in the shipping industry. Mm-hmm. I have talent in the manufacturing industry. You know, I know how to do training programs. I know how to create training programs. And I've never done one for somebody who can't speak English before, but I know we can do it with our hands and make a video out of it. And they all kind of fall in place. You know, these are all a whole bunch of coincidences, right, from God.
Yeah.
But the way to help us, though, we've got two things to get over. 75 million, I can't believe it. That's not even acceptable. I don't even want to think about it. Either it's too big a problem to think about, or it just doesn't make any sense. How could there be 275 million people, you know, in the conditions that I described? And then we can have a solution for $96. I mean, wheelchairs are $500, $600, $6,000, $60,000.
Oh, yeah.
So how can you do that? If you don't need to make money, if you really don't want to make money, you can do things much less expensively.
Don, I want to ask one last question of you, and just take whatever time you want. It's kind of a heavy one, but this was one of the most striking topics in the book for me, and that was that we've talked about the, you know, some of the physical barriers that people with disabilities experiencing a lack of mobility have in developing countries. We've talked about some of the financial difficulties that brings. We've talked even about some of the social and the spiritual, you know, boundaries that can be there, even when giving these gifts and people receiving these gifts. But we haven't really touched on the stigma that can exist in the lives of people with disabilities in, not, I would say not only in developing countries, but in lots of places around the world, lots of cultures around the world, lots of religious experiences around the world, where if someone has a disability, they are seen in a certain light, and that light can be devastating. And it is a little bit heavy, but I was wondering if you could just share a little bit about that and some of the things that you observed and learned in your experiences so far.
Yeah, and that was a surprise to me, because I wasn't brought up that way. We were, you know, in America, we were kind of brought up, you know, trying to be as open-minded to whatever situation the person is living in. And if there was something, it wasn't a physical thing, you could just sort of say, oh, well, they'll work their way through this. And, but if it's something that's a disability, you feel sorry, you feel empathy, but that doesn't go any further than that. But in developing world and the world over, all the countries that I've been in, everybody I've ever talked to or in the missionary field, they say things like a disability. Yeah, the easiest way to explain it is the same way they've explained it back in the Bible. You know, the disciples asked Jesus about this blind man, was he who sinned, or his parents who sinned? And Jesus replied that neither of those. It was so that we could show our glory to God in helping. He didn't quite say that. I mean, this is how we are. We're here to help people like that. What I've heard and seen is it's a curse, and it can get so bad that a husband is justified to leave the family because he knows there's nobody in his family who can't walk, and so obviously it came from her or his wife, and maybe she had an affair or maybe something, but he's free to leave, and he does so often. And now all of a sudden she's left with a family, and there may be a son or a daughter who's got a disability, and their shame, because that's everyone else. They accept his theory, or they don't, it's not, you don't even have to talk about it. It doesn't have to be a rumor to spread. You can just see somebody with a disability, it's a curse. Even in Latin America, where, you know, it's Catholicism was so, and in Africa, where Catholicism was so powerful in teaching people about Christ. And yeah, I get it, but I still think it's a curse. They're faced with a spiritual disability as well as a physical disability, and the family is torn between, do I keep this a secret? It might be just better if I didn't talk about Grandpa, because he's out in the shed and we're keeping him alive. But if we don't have him come out into the daylight, then nobody will wonder about what has happened in our family to have caused this in the first place. In our distribution partner in Uganda, I've actually been in some of the homes of the people that have a disabled child or a relative of some sort. It could even be a neighbor. There's a stool in the corner. It might be the only place other than the ground to sit, but the stool is for the devil. And they put food out for the devil, because they know he's there, because otherwise they wouldn't have this child with a disability. And this is probably the worst story I've ever heard was when this family, the neighbors found out that this they had a child who had polio, and they knew that the family loved the child, so they figured they should step up and take care of the situation. And they called the shaman, a local witch doctor, and they brought the shaman to the person's house and where the boy was. And the shaman, he has his ancient bag of medical bag of, you know, tools. And he decides that if he gouged the eye out of the child, that would force the demon to leave. And that's what he did. And it can get that bad. We work with Christian mission organizations. There's plenty of countries that will allow Christian missionaries to say their words, to preach the gospel. There's quite a few that don't. It's not allowed. In fact, you can get in big trouble if you're caught doing it. But whenever we give out a chair, and our partner says, can you give a message? We're not going to tell you what kind of message you need to give, because it all depends on how you want to present it and how far you can go, because there's probably going to be people working for the government out there listening to what you say. And so we don't want you to jeopardize your missionary work at our bequest, because you're there doing God's work, whether you know it or not. But if you can tell people that this is a gift from God, and it may be confusing to introduce the concept of Jesus to a family, to a society that doesn't even know about God yet. But tell them it's a gift from God. And when he's in that chair or her, they're in God's hands, and he loves you, and he doesn't see you as a disabled person, because everything he's created is, in his eyes, is perfect, because that's what God is, perfect. And I've seen people react to this message and they're spellbound, because they never heard this before from somebody with authority, which is a distribution partner, because these people have authority. And sometimes I get a chance to tell that story, or our staff or our board members or our volunteers who go out with these trips, and they get to tell this story, and they can see, you really challenge somebody, because they've never heard this before in their whole life, maybe. And it's like, wow, is that true? Could that be possibly true? Okay, now you got this bright, bright blue chair, and you're in a village of maybe 300 people, or maybe it's a city, but everywhere you go, they never saw you before, but they knew you were where they sort of knew the house you came from, but they never saw you before because you're being hidden. And where'd you get that chair? And it's very conspicuous. And they'll say, well, these guys came and gave it to me. And so, well, did they tell you anything? He goes, yeah, I don't really understand it, but they said this chair came from God and he loves me. And he doesn't see me as being disabled, and I'm not cursed. And it's like, oh, well, you know, how are the neighbors going to accept this? How are the city going to accept this? Well, that's what he said. You know, it's like the people that Jesus helped in the Bible. Well, I don't know who he was. He just said that my sins are forgiven.
Don, thank you so much. I'm just thrilled. I'm thrilled to hear these stories. I was thrilled to read this book with so many of these stories and more inside. And I'm honored that you would come on and talk about the work of Free Wheelchair Mission. This is a beautiful, beautiful organization. And I can just only imagine the effects, the eternal effects that that you and the people who work within your organization are having in the world. So I want to thank you again for coming on, and I want to say the name of this book again. It is Miracle Wheels, The Story of a Mission to Bring Mobility to the World. Don Schoendorfer, founder of Free Wheelchair Mission, and I'll put the links for the book and the website on the show notes. Thank you so much, Don.
Well, thank you. It is really an honor to talk to you. And I hope through this your words, and people will hear it, and they may discover what their gifts are, and they may get on a path. And it isn't necessarily to help Free Wheelchair Mission. It's just to do God's work.
Amen.
The links for all the resources mentioned in today's episode can be found in the show notes. Music and podcast production by Seth Busetti. Be sure to give us a review on iTunes and subscribe at your favorite podcast listening app. You can also visit us at thatmakestotalsense.com.